Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for an illuminating conversation with Cindy Rancic and Mike Ferris with the Santa Maria Valley Historical Society's Museum. We'll discover how Santa Maria was for more than 100 years prime dairy country. We'll learn about how the real Zorro was based on two real-life Valley characters, and how Santa Maria was the birthplace of the frozen food industry, and it's been a Hollywood hotspot since the silent film era, when Cecil B. DeMille filmed the Ten Commandments on the Guadalupe sand dunes. There were big-time stars who got their first gigs on stage at Santa Maria's PCPA, including Kathy Bates and Robin Williams. We'll learn how Jane Russell was a longtime Santa Maria resident. We'll discover the exact ingredients that are requisite for official Santa Maria-style barbecue. And we'll find out about the incredible life of Captain Alan Hancock and so much more. The Historical Society has just published a book chronicling the 100-year run of the dairy industry, entitled The Purple Cow. So that's where we'll start our valley journey.
Well, it's a book about the dairy industry in the Santa Maria Valley, starting around 1870 and going up till the last dairy closed in 2005. Okay, the last dairy was the DiBernardi Dairy, located on East Main Street.
You had over 100 years where dairying was an integral part of the whole region.
Well, it was actually the most important industry in the valley at that time.
Really? Over 100 individual family-owned dairies?
Well, we say that there were 96. That's a rough
around
count. They were small dairies. The size of your dairy depended on how many boys you had to milk the cow.
Throughout that 100-year run, there were a lot of technological transformations, a lot of evolving things, and even how you milked a cow that could change your herd size.
Yeah, well, it was the technology ultimately that put the small dairies out of business. Because they were small dairies, they couldn't afford the big change. This is in the 1930s especially. There was a big change going from a Class B dairy that could only produce milk to a Class A where they did cheese and yogurt and all these other things. They simply couldn't afford the technology.
In the day, there were, in addition to dairies, there were creameries in Santa Maria Valley. Tell us about the creameries, Golden State, and some names that we all grew up with.
Yeah, well, the Golden State Creamery, Knudsen Creamery was obviously a large one.
Why do we go from a major industry to gone, zero?
Well, again, it's because of the small size of the dairies and the cost of industrialization, having to go to pasteurization, having to go to the other things that the state required in order to go from the Class B to the Class A dairy.
Tell us a little bit more about the book and what somebody would learn, what you found most fascinating about the book. You were the editor of the book.
The book has three parts. The first part is the dairy industry in general, and the second part, we had over 70 contributors, 40 actual authors of personal stories about the dairies that they lived on. The part that I like is the third part, which is basically a scrapbook. There's a dairymaid song. There are photographs that we couldn't fit in other places in the book. There are recipes. Just really fun part of the book.
Mm-hmm. The purple cow? Why? That was answered in the book.
Yes, and the author refuses to let anybody tell about the answer without reading the book.
It's
obviously based on the poem, The Purple Cow, okay? But there's the incident that the book specifically relates.
One point in time, the county fair, there was a purple cow that was at the fair, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. So where would somebody get the Purple Cow book?
Well, the only place you can buy it really is at the Santa Maria Historical Society Museum, and it's available for $30. If you want it mailed, you can send a check for $38.
Tell us about the Santa Maria Valley Historical Museum. It's a physical place that somebody can go and see.
It is, and so we should probably give you our address in case you want a Purple Cow, the book. We're at 616 South Broadway in Santa Maria, which is pretty much about two blocks from the center of town if you take the Main Street exit. The museum, as you say, we're very fortunate to have a location where we can share photographs and artifacts based on the history of the Santa Maria Valley.
What are some of the coolest things that you have in the museum, if I came there, the not-to-be-missed items?
Well, you know, now I'm sharing my personal favorites. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Mike knows I'm going to say that the number one thing I always think is fun and has a great historical story with it is we have a noose that's from the one and only hanging in Santa Maria, or lynching, that was done by a group of vigilantes in the town. And so we have that noose.
And how long ago was that?
A long time ago. The lynching was in 1890, so wasn't anything too recent. The person who was hung is actually buried in an unmarked grave in the Santa Maria Cemetery. That's certainly one of my favorite things to look at. We've got folks who are interested in sports, and we have a sports area. We have folks who are interested in railroads. We have a little railroad area.
When did Santa Maria start?
Well, now, see, that's kind of tricky, too. You mean Santa Maria, Central City, or Grangeville? So we went through a period of times with a lot of name changes. But actually, Santa Maria itself was incorporated in 1905. Mm-hmm. So we're not that old.
Before incorporation, there was a village there.
There was Central City. Mm-hmm. We were Central City for about 8 years, beginning in 1874. And we got our ultimate start as Grangeville or Grangerville. Prior to that, around 1870, folks started arriving in the valley around 1860, 69. At least the history of our specific town, anyway.
Mm-hmm. And it pretty much was, as it remains to a degree, an ag-based community, correct?
We're very agricultural-based, yes. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we've had several industries come and go in Santa Maria. In that general area, where there was a town called Betteravia, which was all about sugar beets, and that was a whole town and industry, and it overlapped into Santa Maria and Guadalupe. Of course, that town is also gone. We had other industries that came and went. Columbia Records came and went. We had the dairy industry that came and went. We've had a lot of different industries that have been very important to the area. Waller Seed used to provide 80% of the seeds for flowers in the world. So there's been a lot of really big industries that have developed, seen their zenith, and some have moved on. Some have slowed down. Obviously, we still have groups like Plantel and different groups that are still providing agricultural products. It really varies. Some things, you know, evolved to new things, and other things moved on.
And what's interesting is for a relatively small town, an agricultural-based town, it's left a big mark in the world as it's evolved. You were talking about the frozen food vegetable industry that has its roots in Santa Maria.
Right. Frozen food developed on either coast because, of course, if you've got stuff on the west, you want to get it to the east, and if you've got stuff in the east, you want to get it to the west. So the frozen food industry kind of jointly was created on either end. I guess the folks in the middle were the luckiest, and it was English frozen foods was kind of the main thrust out here. As we discussed, Captain Hancock created an ice storage facility, ice making facility, and in order to make fruits frozen and move them to the other side, and and Birdseye did the same thing on the other side. So incredible products created out of necessity that just are so taken for granted today.
Let's talk for a moment about Captain Allen Hancock. That guy is a bigger-than-life character, whether he was from Santa Maria or not. Just alone, his flight school and training of airmen during World War II. That's incredible.
You know, he's a phenomenal character, and he came along during a kind of great industrial revolutionary period. And so there were a lot of things to be discovered. Flight. I mean, he was also a ship's captain. He was also an incredible musician.
And then he was a dairyman too, right?
He definitely did. And, of course, I think a lot of folks remember Rosemary Farms.
Yes.
And Rosemary, of course, was his daughter and the eggs. And that was quite a phenomenal industry as well. So there isn't much he didn't get into. As we like to say, he didn't just get into it. He perfected it.
Right.
He did it very well.
And then, as I remember, the Marion Medical Center was named after his wife?
Right. I believe they were responsible for donating the land, and Marion was Allen Hancock's third wife. Yes.
Right. And then he started a railroad, Santa Maria Valley Railroad.
Well, there was a railroad that had just gone bankrupt, and he bought it on the courthouse steps for a pittance. And he turned it and made it one of the busiest short line railroads in the country. Like I said, anything he did superbly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a personal favorite question. I was told years and years ago that Zorro, the real Zorro, lived in Santa Maria.
Okay. Well, as I understand it, Zorro is based on two characters, Solomon Pico, whose hideout, if you will, was Solomon Hill, just south of Orcutt.
And Pico was a bandito, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Joaquin Marietta, who was another famous California bandito. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Zorro is in a combination of these two. And Solomon Pico is supposed to have buried his loot up on Solomon Hill.
And where is Solomon Hill for the treasure hunter?
It is just south of Orchid. You can't miss it because it's covered with microwave towers now.
So see, lots of treasure.
Yeah. So tell us some more of those anecdotal cool stories, like the Zorro connection with Santa Maria, one of your favorite things that people might not know about.
You have a favorite story, Mike?
Take me a minute to think of one.
Put
him on the spot. Well, yeah. I was going to say, I'm the big talker here, but we get a lot of stories daily at the Historical Museum because we get a lot of folks that come in to do research. And so they'll bring in their stories, things they've heard, like you'd said you'd heard about Zorro. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of times we get people coming in to learn more and to confirm the stories based on some little snippet of information. And that's kind of where we really enjoy in the museum, really enjoy doing the research and helping people trace themselves back to some colorful character. Some of the favorite stuff we do is help people learn about their heritage.
What I find an interesting story was a lady from the Bay Area who wanted to know if we had any information about her grandmother, who was supposed to have been born in the first house built in Santa Maria. When she came down, it turned out that she was in her 80s or so. She had been diagnosed with cancer and was going to die last December. We had found 13 photographs, the photograph of the original house, the photograph of her grandmother and her grandfather. We had the grave markers. She was in tears. We were all but in tears. It made the whole job worthwhile.
That's really cool. Recently, there was a very famous silver screen movie actress that lived in Santa Maria from World War II.
Jane Russell?
Yes, Jane Russell. Mm-hmm. Everybody asked me, how did Jane Russell wind up living in Santa Maria?
Gosh, we're just practically the sweet spot on the Central Coastline. I don't know how you could ask us that. I mean, Santa Maria is a wonderful place to live. I've heard us referred to now as the Chardonnay capital of the world. If you like great wine and great food, we have Santa Maria-style barbecue. So certainly, I think there's a lot to recommend us in the area.
We have a tremendous number of celebrities, both athletes and other celebrities who have come out of the Santa Maria area, very disproportionate to the size of our community.
Interesting.
People are well aware of Mark Brunell and Robin Ventura, but you go back to Kenny Heights and Steve Patterson, who played basketball for the Lakers, Teddy Davidson, who was the first baseball player to come out of Santa Maria and was shot by his ex-wife.
Whoa, and these are Santa Maria High School grads?
Yeah. And then you have Kathy Bates and Robin Williams.
And
list
PCPA.
Of people from PCPA yeah. is just unlimited.
Tell us about Santa Maria-style barbecue. That, I mean, that's bigger than life.
Mike and I had the opportunity to just have some great barbecue. We were out at the Pioneer Picnic, and it was fantastic. And so they had one of the, you know, Ike Stemus and Herschel Rouse are out there cooking. And so we just had some great Santa Maria-style barbecue that's world famous.
What defines Santa Maria-style barbecue?
First of all, it's copyrighted by the Chamber of Commerce. It has to be tri-tip or top block. Salt, pepper, and garlic are the only spices you can use, and you use red oak for the wood. Mm-hmm. Those are the definitions of a Santa Maria-style barbecue.
Talk to us about beans for a moment.
Pinquito beans, yes. Pinquito beans were developed in the Santa Maria Valley, but nobody knows how they were actually started. We have an obituary that says that a gentleman, William Ben Dixon, actually created them. He worked for the State Department of Agriculture, but we haven't been able to get hold of the family to get confirmation of that. We would really love to prove that because it's all over the internet that nobody knows mm-hmm. how they were started.
But you know.
Which is interesting because we brought up obituaries a couple of times. It's kind of interesting the things that people will put into an obituary. And it's kind of a lost art form, too, because they're not nearly as interesting as they used to be. We kind of have this little joke around the museum about how many ways people can go from here to there. Everything from they crossed over to they were called.
We had somebody last week who got her angel's wings.
Got her angel's wings, yeah. Like I said, the transition language is quite fascinating to us. Cross the Great Divide. So there's just lots of ways that that happens. And every once in a while, we'll find a new one, and it's like, oh, my gosh, listen to this. That's the way I want to go. And if they call me, I'm not answering. And so we have a lot of fun with the language.
Experiencing Santa Maria's history live and in color if somebody was to come down and spend a weekend, what can you see? Driving tours, what can you experience stepping back in time?
Well, that's an interesting question because, unfortunately, Santa Maria has pretty much removed most of its historical buildings from its downtown area. They've made 10 or 20 movies in our area from the Guadalupe Dunes area all the way into town.
And what was it, the Bible? Remember the big one?
Ten Commandments. So Cecil B. DeMille spent a lot of time in Santa Maria. He used to go to Rotary in Santa Maria.
And that was actually filmed twice, black and white, non-talk silent film, and color with Carlton Heston.
You know, the Santa Maria Inn is built exactly where a Model A runs out of gas. So you can make it all the way from L.A., bang, you're going to run out of gas at the Santa Maria Inn. Frank McCoy put that there so that people could ride comfortably one day's ride right to his hotel. So a lot of folks from Hollywood, a lot of movie stars have stayed there. It's haunted. It's really quite a fascinating place.
But no Marilyn Monroe.
Another story was at the Black Dahlia. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly, she worked at Camp Cook and was in the Santa Maria era, was actually even got into a little scrape or arrest in Santa Maria at one point before she was murdered and famously, became the Black Dahlia. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great stories, which makes it so much fun for us to write the books. One of the projects we're working on, if you were going to come to Santa Maria now, is that we've just completed a booklet on Civil War veterans of Santa Maria. And so we have a cemetery walk, and you can go and see each of the veterans from the American Civil War. And that's certainly something interesting. We have a very interesting area in our town referred to as Palm Court that's just been designated as a historic landmark. And these homes were built in the 20s, but they had underground utilities and all kinds of things. Things we're still trying to accomplish today. Mm-hmm. And so our city fathers in the Santa Maria area were very thoughtful and did a lot of amazing things. Certainly the museum itself is available. We have a natural history museum, a children's museum, and all of those places share the story and the excitement of what it's like to be in the valley.
The Flight Museum.
The Flight Museum, that's right, that's right.
That's at the airport?
Out at the airport, right. Mm-hmm. That's where we keep the planes.
Right.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that people don't know, and I'm not sure how it relates to your question so much, is Lakeview was a community just south of Santa Maria before you got to Orchid. Between Lakeview and Los Alamos at one time, there were 9 communities.
Wow.
It's only 15 miles.
Wow.
Stagecoach, post office, school.
You know, when it takes a long time to go anywhere, a few miles is, enough to create a new town.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us for a moment before we go about some of the peripheral towns, Casmalia and different areas that are in that satellite of Santa Maria.
I think those happened mostly around because of the railroad. They had all these little spurs and junctures that created a lot of different stops.
Although it's interesting to notice, Santa Maria was pretty much the last of these communities. Guadalupe, Casmalia, Gary, these all preceded Santa Maria.
Okay, so if somebody was going to come down and experience living history, and then they wanted to taste Santa Maria-style barbecue, where would you go?
Well, we just couldn't possibly recommend one place to try Santa Maria-style barbecue.
I know.
Mike's already told you, in order to be Santa Maria-style barbecue, it has to be prepared exactly one way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several places in town that serve authentic Santa Maria-style barbecue. Almost every restaurant will offer you Santa Maria-style barbecue because you're in Santa Maria. Whether you're at the Santa Maria Inn, you're at Shaw's, like you said, you head out towards Orchid, to the Far Western, they all have to adhere to the same recipe. Mm-hmm. It also depends on how you like it, So there's not much variation in how they prepare it, but there's definitely a lot of things that go in.
And do y'all have an annual Santa Maria-style barbecue cook-off?
Well, it's kind of the Pioneer Picnic, I guess.
Yeah. So there is that one-stop day when you can come. And when is the Pioneer Picnic each year?
The second Saturday in July.
I'm from the community of Los Alamos. My wife was a Fox, in which reached my grandchildren, seventh generation Santa Maria Valley. Of Los Alamos has its own little history, which we, the Santa Maria Historical Society, are trying to capture because nobody else is out there really capturing it. But it's an exciting community.
And it has a little kind of downtown walkthrough area. That makes it kind of fabulous. But we are the Santa Maria Valley Historical Society, so we remember the towns that are gone, like Bettaravia and La Graciosa
and
Sisquoc. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, Los Alamos is 10, 12 miles, I guess.
Website for further information.
SantaMariaHistory.com.
Excellent. Mike Ferris and Cindy Rancic with the Museum, Santa Maria Valley Historical Society. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting for Issues and Ideas.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,